You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 10 October, Japanese bank lending up 3.8% year on year. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Skoklo, PSG, Old Oak, news that the CEO of the JSE, Dr. Leila Free, is stepping down. But that got me thinking, in a booming equity market, surely JC should be a stock we should be looking at. And then Skulk's got some data. This booming market, as we're talking about it. How booming is it if you don't have gold and PGMs? We're chatting with Equitas Property Fund CEO. Strong numbers exiting the UK. Even building some speculative properties, which shows strong confidence. And thoughts for me, US government shutdown and the impact on the economy. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, astonishing drop in returns from Truers. Average returns over trailing 15 years have collapsed by 74% in the last decade. Business Day, Kenyatta admits to tensions with Treasury over inflation target. Reserve Bank Governor tells MPs communications on the 3% goal was not what it was supposed to be. Morning markets, the US was red, S&P down 0.3%, NASDAQ down 0.25%. The East is mostly red, Sydney the exception, up 0.33%. We've got Tokyo, little under 1% lower, Hong Kong, a little over 1% lower, and then Tencent, 2.7% lower. Commodities, all red. Gold futures, 3,982. Brent, 65.15. Platinum, 1,639. Palladium, 1,475. The rand is 17.20. Bitcoin's 121,500. And top 40 opening call, red open, 510 points or 0.5% lower.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Skulklo, PSG Old Oak. Skulk, always appreciate the early morning. As I said in the intro yesterday, the big story yesterday, Dr. Leila Free stepping down as CEO of the JSC. She's been there, I think, 6 years. Valdene Reddy will take over next year when this happens. All nice, smooth, not, I suppose, totally unexpected. Maybe 6 years, a little short for a term. But then I got to myself thinking, if we've got booming markets at records, both the top 40 and all share above 100,000, and surely the JSE should be potentially looking attractive as an investment. They must be making more money on higher markets and more interest.
Yeah, good morning, Simon. Man, what a innings Dr. Leila Free had. I mean, yeah, I'm going to get you a question now.
Yeah.
Because it's a great one. But I mean, let's just spend a few seconds on that that's, you know, short term that you talked about. I mean, she started off in October 2019. It's pretty much, as you mentioned, 6 years. But I mean, what a 6 years! I mean, we had the COVID-19 crisis. We had two serious wars, you know, in that time. South Africans been downgraded to you know, gray listings, and it's been a crazy time for her to be pretty much on the helm. And just for interest sake, and this is not the JSE share price itself. I mean, we're talking about the JSE all share in that period. I mean, the JSE all share increased by just over 150%. That's 17% per annum.
Wow.
So, I mean, yeah, it's just again shows you. I mean, you might read the newspapers, but Mr. Market always tells you a different story. But yeah, I mean, she's been in the helm. I mean, over that period, the JSE itself increased by 57%, and I agree with you. I definitely agree with you. We've had again this week we've had the news of a new IPO, Optasia. Mm-hmm. So yes, we've had a few companies that delisted that was bought out, but I think if you look at the volumes, I mean, I'm just looking at the pure volumes.
Yeah,
let's go two three years ago. We struggled to make it at 20 billion. Trade per day, yep. You know, on the JSE, and you know, lately we've been doing, you know, close to 30 billion a day. So yeah, I think it's definitely something to look at.
So here's a fun fact. Dr. Leila Faree, her PhD was on a virus breaking out in Asia and disrupting global markets. And she did that ahead of the pandemic. Let's switch to something else. You and I were on TV earlier in the week, and you're a data nerd. That's a lacquer thing. I say that with the utmost respect. But you pulled out really good returns for the JSE 2025. We had a spectacular year. You remove gold and PGM counters, or even just gold, and suddenly it's not quite so pretty in that regard.
Yeah, I think first point, don't remove them. because you won't like what you see, and I'm going to tell the listeners. I'm in 35% year to date. That's up to yesterday. That's what we've seen, the return on the JSE Aussie. I mean, firstly, I mean, that's just crazy to think. 35% year-to-date return. Now, if you take the gold counters, there's only five, and I've included Sibanye-Stillwater, so that makes it six. Mm-hmm. Why? Because, I mean, Sibanye-Stillwater is now close to 50% of the EBITDAs made out of gold. I mean, gold's back. So that removes pretty much 15% of that 35, bringing us to 20%. So I said, well, okay, there we go. I mean, we need to add the three pure PGM counters as well. If you exclude them, there goes another 4%. That only leaves us with 16%. I mean, they talk about the Magnificent Seven. I mean, there goes a Magnificent, nine that will make you cry if you didn't have them. And then somebody asked me on X, but can't you just remove Naspers and Prosus as well? And I did the calculation, and there went another 8%, pretty much leaving us with 8% growth year to date versus 35%. So, I mean, model the story, 78%, close to 80% of our total return came out of 11 stocks for 2025 thus far.
A staggering number. A couple of major, major thoughts. Firstly, if we did 8% excluding gold, PGMs, Naspers, and Prosus, it means that our market is not the roaringly expensive beast that it appears on the surface. It is really very, very narrow field.
No, definitely. I mean, again, we're not expensive by any means. I mean, if you look at our forward P's, on Bloomberg Consensus, you will note, the likes of the US will show that it's really looking extremely expensive. When you look at South African JSE, I mean, it's not even at our 15-year mean. Yeah. So we're not expensive as we sit here. And just remember, I mean, the gold counters itself, yes, they ran a crazy amount. But remember, these gold mines mine the gold for anything between $1,700 to $2,000 per ounce. And they're selling it to close to $4,000 per ounce. So they're doing really, really well. I wouldn't be calling tops on the JSE itself for now. Definitely not.
Yeah, and last year they got around $2,200 per ounce, as you said. They've sold some gold this week at $4,000. A last question, though, as well, is that a lot of investors who sort of, I don't know, shun commodities, and there's lots of reasons to shun it. The cyclical nature of it makes it difficult. And to be clear, you and I are talking hindsight numbers here. But it does mean that 35%, which the index is up, I suspect a lot of funds and a lot of investors, DIY investors, haven't done it because they didn't get the exposure to the commodities.
Yeah, that's one of the comments that I received as well. Somebody you told me, says, "Go, there's a lot of people that always sort of perceive gold as something you trade, not something you invest in, and then they exclude it out of their portfolio." And similar to some of these PGM counters, bottom line is South Africa still is very much a resource producing country. I mean, and if you're going to be excluding, shares or companies that we actually strong in South Africa, then you might as well just exclude South Africa out of your portfolio. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree on that. We'll leave it there. Skulklo, PSG Old Oak, always appreciate the early morning insights. Our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. How's your portfolio done in 2025? If you're saying there, if you haven't had the commodities, and that resi is up 120%, if you haven't had those, might have been a bleak year. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Andrea Taverna-Theresen, CEO of Equitas Property Fund. Results 6 months ending August. Vacancies down at 1.5%. NAV up 2.7% at 16.93. Distribution per share up 3.8% at 69.04 cents. Andrea, appreciate the time. I want to touch quickly on the UK. You are exiting UK. It's a process. I imagine you're sort of winding down and ensuring getting the best prices you can for assets and then ultimately bring those funds back to the local operations in South Africa.
Yeah, that's 100% correct. I mean, obviously, the UK has been massively beneficial to us.
Yeah.
We've really performed well there over the last 9 years. The problem we have is obviously is deploying new capital there just doesn't give us the commensurate returns. And as a consequence, we're very fortunate in that we ran a 100% hedging policy on our debt in the UK. So we haven't been affected by the interest rate cycle in the last couple of years. And hence, we're still in a position where the assets are benefiting from the significant rental increase that we've seen across the portfolio. But we're coming to the end of that cycle of increases. I'm not sure if your listeners are aware, but in the UK, we don't get annual escalations like we do in SA. We get every 5 years, and we're sort of coming to the end of the cycle of the first 5 years. So to wait for the next cycle to come through, we also are of the opinion that rental growth may be somewhat more muted than it has been in the historic 5 years.
Gotcha.
Our escalation average across the portfolio in the historic 5 years has been approximately 42-43%.
Okay. Bringing it back home, one of the first lines, you talk around South Africa, you say cautious optimism. That you're referring to the country, because I have to say logistics in South Africa and the space you're operating in, I mean, vacancies, 1.5%. You've got weighted average lease expiring of 14.1%. There is demand. There is huge demand. Is there more demand than there is current stock in South Africa for A-grade?
Yes. But, you know, we need to conceptualize it. I mean, with the amount of money that we're bringing back to South Africa, the war chest that we're providing ourselves is about 10 billion rand at a 40% loan to value. So to deploy 10 billion rand within the context of South Africa is a significant number.
Yeah.
And don't forget the amount of organizations that are prepared to or want to operate in the highest quality of logistics solutions. Mm-hmm. It's not every company that plays in that space, you know.
Point.
So, I mean, we're cautiously optimistic. We are going to be very busy. I mean, next year certainly is going to be a bumper year for us. We've got a lot of RFP activity that we seem to be winning at the moment, mm-hmm. and that will come through during the course of next year. But like all these things, you know, it takes time.
Yep.
You don't put up a 100,000 square meter warehouse in 2 or 3 months. It's from start to finish. And when I say start to finish, I include the process of actually going through the RFP and then actually handing the keys to the tenant.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably looking at a minimum of a 2-year cycle.
Okay. And you are doing, however, some what you call the speculative development. In other words,
you're
building without a tenant.
Without a tenant, that's correct.
Which again suggests that there is optimism from yourselves and your
absolutely,
board.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we built a facility on the R21 in the park that we call Riverfields.
Mm-hmm.
It was approximately 25,000 square meters capital cost to Equitas, because don't forget the land was already bought.
Yeah.
So it's just the construction cost and the professional fees and the capitalized interest. Total cost of that development in terms of balance sheet to Equitas during the process of build, probably somewhere in the region of about 240 million rand. You know, you need to build 10 of them.
Yeah.
Spend 2.5 billion, you know, and we're not going to build 10 speculative developments at the same time. You know, we do it in a measured way. And the reason we do it is, you know, whilst the number that you quote us at one point, I think 8% vacancy at the end of the period, subsequent to period, though, we have let one of those facilities. So our vacancy at the moment is sitting at 0.3%.
Oh, wow.
So we are in a very favorable position. But at the same time, you're not going to unleash a crazy amount of speculative buildings into the market.
Yeah.
And over and above that as well, you know, at 25,000, you're probably hitting the sort of the biggest unit that you would do speculatively. You know, you wouldn't be building 50 or 60,000 square meters speculatively.
But you do so. I mean, you're getting through to the request for proposals. You're getting, you've got a JC FMCG. There is an equally large amount of sort of the build to spec. You've also got a balance sheet that looks, I mean, an LTV 37.2%. It's a little up from last year. It doesn't look onerous, particularly as soon as you are getting portfolio rental growth. You're getting money back from the UK.
100%.
Plenty of space.
We're in good shape. I share your optimism. I really do. I mean, I don't mean to sound, but obviously, like all these things, we would love to deploy that capital. And I think deploying it intelligently in South Africa with the quality of covenants, tenants, longevity of lease that we tend to target, the way we manage our properties, you know, our asset managers doing an immense job. You know, a lot of people think because it's fully repairing and maintaining leases that we actually have to do nothing. And the problem lies is that if you do nothing, what tends to happen is your tenants do nothing. So what we do is we do conditioning reports on our buildings twice a year. And so we present the tenant with where they're not doing the maintenance they should be doing so that there's no excuse for them when we hit them with big reinstatement bills, you know. So like everything, you know, it's about doing all the proper work up front and maintaining that work through the process. And I think we do that exceptionally well. And as a consequence, we tend to retain a lot of tenants. I think tenants respect our professionalism. They respect the way that we actually love our properties. They respect the fact that when we build, we really try not to cut corners. You know, a lot of people, they define it as rational engineering. We define it slightly differently to that. We are of the opinion that notwithstanding the fact that you've got a fully repairing and maintaining lease, you still have to put a product out there which mitigates maintenance as much as it possibly can. And I think we do things like that extremely well.
And is there, I mean, I mentioned that your weighted average lease expiry 14.1 years. And in retail and in office, I imagine it's probably a lot closer to 3 or 5. Is logistics typically a much longer lease period? Because that would make sense to me.
Well, it is for us. I don't think it is for many of our competitors. Yeah. You know, ultimately also, you know, to compete at the level where you're putting up sort of 90, 100,000 square meter facilities for top-notch clients, it's not every balance sheet and every developer that can afford to play in that. You also need to own the land, which means that, you know, as an organization, we're sitting on, you know, 47 hectares of land in South Africa. That is in excess of 500 million rand of land on our balance sheet, you know. Wow. So, but if you don't have it, you can't do it kind of thing, you know. Just, I mean, I always refer in my misspent youth when the lotto started in the UK, there used to be an advert that said you got to be in it to win it.
Yeah. 100% on that. We'll leave it there. That's Andrea Tavenner-Theresen, CEO
of Equites
Property
you.
Fund. Andrea, really appreciate it. Let your money benefit from experience with Stanlib Asset Management. Find out about Stanlib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
So U.S. government is still shut down, 10th day of shutdown today. And I thought I'd look at the actual sort of the impact on the economy. First question is, what's actually shut down? It's Homeland Security, Treasury, Agriculture, Interior, Housing, Justice, Commerce, Transportation and State. But effectively, it's about 40% of the federal workforce who is furloughed. In other words, you're told, don't bother coming to work and you're not going to get paid for this either. It's about 750,000 people. It's a chunky number, but you know, the US has probably got in excess of 100 million people working there. So less than 1%. Importantly, those 750,000 folks are not being paid right now, but typically when government does then reopen, they do get back pay for these days. T's and C's around that, we shall see, but certainly that's what's happened in the past and how it's played out. Workers who are considered essential must still report to work, although they're not paid until the government reopens. So, for example, you know, air traffic control services have got 13,000 air traffic controllers. They are technically furloughed, but they're expected to work during the shutdown, but without pay. They'll get the money again when the government reopens. We saw in the last shutdown under Trump that a lot of, for example, the TSA agents who check you at security at the airport, they weren't getting paid, so they just called in sick. repeatedly. So there was bottlenecks and slowing down, and it can potentially get messy there. There's usually a carve-out for staff producing sort of the economic data. Seemingly not this time. The Bureau of Labor Studies did not give us jobs data last week, although we did get the FOMC minutes, although maybe that's just easier. It does create a challenge for the Fed. The individual Fed governors all produce their own data, and there is, of course, private sector data, ADP and others out there that can help. But it does give that Fed the challenge. The meeting is on the 29th of October is their next meeting. Maybe a bigger challenge for the market, for folks like us, because we don't have our own Federal Reserve chair, governors, creating data. So that perhaps is the challenge. The question is, how much does it hurt the economy? Well, we've got the 35-day shutdown, which happened in 2019. That was under Trump's first term. That's the longest in U.S. history. And the Congressional Budget Office estimated that 0.02% was shaved off GDP in that 35-day shutdown. So it's not nothing, but it's also not massive. And a lot of that 0.02 is because people don't get wages. That wage then comes back later. So I would say the real direct impact, absolutely negligible. That's it for today. Yesterday, I was chatting with Jimmy Miaha. We were talking City Lodge. It's buying back shares aggressively, and the stock does seem to be breaking high, although Jimmy did say 450 and then 5 Rand are the really big levels. We asked you, is it time for the stock? 45% said yes. Almost a third said no, leisure for you. A quarter, no, it's a false break. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. How to choose from 130,000 offshore funds.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.